Welcome back, folks. A federal indictment came down on Mayor Cantrell's former bodyguard on Friday. 7 counts of wire fraud and 1 count of false statements. Joining us is Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog. Doc, welcome to the show.
Hello, Newell. How are you doing today?
Doing well. We talked about this issue for all intents and purposes. This is payroll fraud. This seems to be rearing its ugly head in many ways, shapes, and forms in many individuals. Your thoughts about this indictment?
Yes. If you get a chance to, I'm sure you've had a chance to read the indictment. It actually is pretty clear. And it appears the FBI has focused most of their efforts on just that payroll fraud. Where did the money go and why did it go there? And it's a pretty disturbing indictment, particularly since the federal judge, Judge Morgan, had a hearing on that in 2023 and spelled out many of these problems. Yet it appears the problems continued even after 2 days of federal court hearings. And the FBI investigation has laid out some of this. Now, as you know, it wouldn't be surprising that we might see more in the future on this, but it is an officer who's being paid to essentially have an affair with the mayor. And we as the taxpayers are picking up the tab for that.
In discussions, we talked about the Sabrina Richardson case because of the Fourth Circuit ruling reinstating the 119 days of suspension there. You mentioned then that there are other individuals that are still actively employed by the NOPD who are being investigated for some of the same conduct. And I see that the NOPD actually informed you of same by letting you know that there were internal investigations that had begun on a number of officers, many of which are working inside of PIB, right?
That's correct. Yes, I filed a number of complaints 2 years ago against a number of PIB officers that were committing payroll fraud, as well as Captain Richardson was at the time. But the complaint I filed against Officer Vappi was not only against Officer Vappi, but the entire executive protection team. When I looked at their payroll records in 2022, I found all of them in violation of NOPD policy and likely Louisiana law as far as payroll. And I spelled those complaints out, filed them in late 2022. And what happened is that Officer Vappi was dropped from the complaints. So the other members of the executive protection team were investigated, but Officer Vappi was not. Later in 2024, May of 2024, I filed another payroll fraud complaint against Officer Vappi, hoping to see that his payroll records would actually be examined by the NOPD. And there, I think, is 11 points that I made in that submission that it will hopefully be examined. But I think that's been referred to the private law firm, Transcendent or something like that, law firm. And hopefully they will begin an investigation of this as well.
So I think that they acknowledged and issued control numbers for the following, the allegations that you made against Jeffrey Vappi, allegations against Audrey Thomas, Keith Sanchez, Max Schuler, Eric Carter, Precious Banks, and three allegations against Keith Sanchez. It seems as though all of these have been sent to the Transcendent law firm to be looked at, right?
That's correct. And the problem I have with Chief Sanchez is that he is the head of PIB. He should have ensured that this examination of Vappi occurred. And as we now know, when there was some examination of Officer Vappi and his behavior, they ignored payroll records. And the federal court pointed this out in 2023. That should have been enough stimulation for them to open the records again and examine those. And I provided them with the payroll records for a couple of years, and yet nothing happened. So I was forced to file another payroll fraud complaint, and that appears to be going outside of the NOPD and outside of PIB. But certainly, why did he not examine this? And it's unusual to have a complaint and then the complaint is simply ignored, or that an officer is simply dropped out of the complaint. And of course, now I think we have to sit back and think, well, who influenced this? And as we now know from this indictment, it was likely the mayor.
You talked last week when we discussed this very corrupting methodology of disparate treatment. You know, it's a classic case of what you know, but who you know, as to whether or not you're going to be investigated or not. And it reveals itself again, is basically what you're saying here, right?
That's a good point. I wasn't thinking of it at this moment, but I think you're absolutely right. The NOPD and officers within the NOPD have complained for years that PIB has been a very selective organization, where they have looked very diligently into some complaints and then done very poor jobs or ignored other complaints. Now, to be fair, that seems to have changed under Sanchez, and there seems to be a positive direction occurring here. And to give them some credit, it's difficult to change the direction of a large organization, particularly when some of the officers in PIB are still corrupt and still have issues and shouldn't be in PIB. You should only have the best of the best at PIB, officers that are really beyond reproach, so that they can effectively investigate other officers. This is really the only place that you can get an officer investigated, and it's being done by other officers. And if they have their own issues, their own corruption issues, their own payroll issues, they shouldn't be in PIB. And they certainly shouldn't be looking at examples like we've seen with Officer Vappy.
Now, what do you think is going to take? And I'm encouraged to hear that you say that it's going in a more appropriate direction. While we were on air, I was receiving information from folks saying that in the case of Sabrina Richardson, that she was allowed to sit for the captain's exam and the major exam, and that she's got this plum assignment relative to the Super Bowl. When you get reminded of things such as that, and you have individuals that are still within PIB that I would imagine have made some of the same admissions that she made, or maybe not, that this continues on today, it would seem to me that somebody somewhere somehow would want to put a bow on this thing and wrap it up and get it over with in order to move on.
I think you have, again, hit on a really good point. Again, I'm encouraged by our new chief, Chief Kilpatrick. And I think, again, it's steering a large ship and trying to change the direction of it. And I think she's trying to do just that. And I think the recent arrests of a couple of officers are a telling sign. It's going to be encouraging to see maybe some more. But it's very difficult for a new person to walk in and understand the complexity of NOPD and some of the complex relationships that have developed over sometimes decades, where some of these people went to the same schools. And because of that, they tend to be protected within the NOPD. And while they commit major infractions, are still employed at the NOPD and still doing the same thing. And I think we're going to see some more. There are a couple of officers that have been implicated in providing information from the NOPD directly to the mayor. And I don't think we've seen the last of that.
You, The individuals that we just named, that you received a recognition of the filing of your complaint and that this will be investigated by the Transcendent Law Firm, let me gain a better understanding here. You actually made the complaint 2 years ago on these officers?
Yes. Yes, I made the original
why do you
complaint.
Why do you think July 2nd, 2024, you're hearing for the first time that this is going to, you know, these control numbers have been issued and these allegations are going to be investigated at this time?
I am hopeful that it's an indication of some real change at the NOPD, where they really would like to see the house cleaned of some of these bad characters, and they would like to put this behind them. In talking to some officers, one of the things I realized is they are intensely embarrassed by the behavior of Officer Vappy. And they know it reflects poorly on them. And I think almost, in which most of the NOPD officers are honest, they don't want to see this behavior. They don't want this kind of reflection on their badge, on their career. And they are happy to see this sort of moving forward. And actually, from some of the messages you just received, I suspect that's a reflection of some of the officers in the NOPD, that they want some change. And they want legitimate, honest, ethical officers put in positions of authority or power. And they don't want to see this sort of continued corruption occur. And if you think about historically why this has happened, well, if the mayor has a relationship with one of the officers, you wouldn't be very surprised if she was very protective of the NOPD. And, of course, very protective of her boyfriend at the NOPD. And I think there may have been a lot of pressure by the mayor to see very little action done. And, again, that is changing direction. We have a new chief. We have a new head of PIB. And even though he is named in that complaint, I got to give Mr. Sanchez some credit. He is changing the direction, and that is also true of Chief Kilpatrick.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where this ultimately plays out here. I don't believe in coincidences that, you know, 2 years later, something stimulated something somewhere, somehow, to look at these other complaints. When you let them sit in a state of inertia for a 2 year period of time and nothing is done with it, it's kind of suspect, right? I mean, it just,
yes. And something I've personally found is if a complaint is not filed, the NOPD tends not to look at itself. And that's really the problem. Somebody from the public needs to sit down, look at these records and sit down and write a complaint. And that can be very intimidating to someone. These are NOPD officers. They carry a gun and a badge and a uniform. They come with all the authority and responsibility that comes with that. And some people are very reluctant to step forward and say something about this. And that can change over time, and people will step forward. But it's really put a lot of pressure on the court and the consent monitors, as well as the FBI, to sort of step in to right the ship and correct the direction of what's going on here.
And it may be that they don't come out from under the consent decree until they get some of this stuff cleaned up as well. And that may be where some of the pressure is coming from.
I really, truly hope that's the case. I am concerned without the consent judgment that we wouldn't have the kind of pressure we need for legitimate reform. And we have got to stop payroll fraud within the NOPD. And we can only imagine some of these officers have been engaged in things besides payroll fraud. And these officers need to be removed from the NOPD. And you really need an NOPD that examines itself. And I realize we don't have the number of officers that we expect or want, but corrupt officers are not a positive. Many of these officers do little or no work.
No, it needs to be rooted out for sure. And those that are making the sacrifices, doing what the public expects of them day in and day out, They have zero tolerance for this, and many times they feel like they're muzzled, they're stifled. They can't really say what they need to say for fear of retribution, and that's not a healthy climate or landscape to work in on a good day. And I'm sure you've heard the stories. I've heard the stories. There are things that have gone on that I just simply do not understand how they did not come to the forefront, how they were not dealt with on a daily basis, and who had this information, who's never been held accountable because of a lack of leadership and an unwillingness to actually do something and affect change. Everybody wants to be rank, but no one wants to fulfill the obligations of rank. That's part of the problem. Yep. Dr. Skip Gallagher, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the great work. We'll be checking in with you again, I'm certain, in the near future. Have a great week.
All right. Thank you, Noel.
That's Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We all know about the CrowdStrike massive global tech outage, the Windows glitch that created chaos around the world. It seems as though many are still trying to recover. Alex Hammerstone, Advisory Solutions Director at TrustedSec, joins us. Alex, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Alex, I know that we were trying to get our hands around this issue as to the breadth and depth of the impact. Have we gained any additional knowledge in that regard?
So the impact is obviously huge, and I think what it illuminates is it doesn't necessarily need to be something that affects every computer on Earth, but really something that affects the important ones, right? And so even if it's not necessarily affecting the computers of home users and things like that, it's shutting down or was shutting down and causing issues for a lot of these very large companies that we all depend on for our kind of daily routine and life.
There were reports that, well, let me ask this question first. There a number of folks are wondering the breadth and depth of mobile devices. It doesn't seem to have impacted cell phones for the most part, but how about other devices like iPads, iPad Pro, iPads? They kind of run on a little bit of a different operating system, right?
That's correct. And really the company in question that we're talking about really deals with kind of businesses, right? So it's very unlikely that a home user would be using their products. Now, the issue is, if you think about it, just about everything that you do on your phone or even your laptop at home and everything else depends on other companies, right? So in the old days, we used to play games or, you know, type things or do things on our devices. But now almost everything's using a third-party service. So if you're going to book a flight or, you know, kind of log into a website or get some kind of service, you're depending on businesses to provide that. And that's really how it affected consumers, more so than it being their devices in particular.
So what was this exactly? Was this an updated version of this Falcon sensor software that was being put in place and beefed up in order to protect folks from our systems from being hacked?
So in short, you know, if I were just to call it an update, I'd probably get some of my tech friends nitpicking that a little bit. But if you think about it this way, is that, you know, these different programs that are out there and installed have to respond and react to real-time threats and kind of a changing world and everything else. So they're constantly updated. They're constantly receiving new information. And, you know, the thing with these types of software is they have to have a lot of access to the computers and the systems so they can see what's happening and also react and respond to it. And so when something goes wrong, it can lead to an issue like this.
So there's reports out there now that are saying that there may have been shortcuts taken, that they skipped checks as it related to this, and they say that the vetting or the sandboxing may not have been as robust as necessary. What are you guys hearing?
So I've seen those reports as well. You know, the fact of the matter is you never want to say kind of these things happen, you know, with an outage this big or an issue this big. But the way software development works and the way development works is, you know, people have to move quickly and they're trying to respond to issues and threats and so on and so forth. I don't have kind of full visibility into the processes that they were using to kind of check these things. But generally with any organization, you know, we want to see these things tested and checked. Before they're sent out. So I don't have full insight, as I said, into what may have gone wrong there. But in general, you know, for anything, you want to make sure that's happening.
So what you're saying is that this is something that you would alpha, beta test in an artificial world to see what the impact would be to a program, right? And it kind of gives you the heads up as to the interaction and whether or not you left something in that shouldn't be in, or there's something that was left out that needed to be in.
So generally, you always want to be testing these updates, right, before you send them out and things like that. And, you know, you have to assume that a company is kind of, you know, with as much market penetration and as large as, you know, CrowdStrike, going to have those processes in place. That's not to say they don't get missed sometimes or sometimes processes break down. But again, you know, if you're looking at this, you know, you think about these kind of big software implementations, and before you roll out a whole new one, there's tons of testing that goes in place and so on and so forth. But oftentimes for incremental updates, they're kind of considered more standard changes. And so they don't get that full testing. You certainly still want to make sure they're going to work and obviously don't cause these issues. But the process really is kind of variable depending on the software or the service and what have you.
There are those that are saying because there's so many things coming at all of these companies, in order to stay current, they're just like just blowing and going, and there are changes to software and code, you know, dare I say daily in some respects.
Well, more than daily too, you know, so a lot of the things that we use every day are really constantly and consistently updated. You know, they're constantly sending out new updates and changes and so on and so forth. So, you know, we're used to seeing that on our cell phones or computers. You know, there are different patches that come out and updates and things like that. But really, with a lot of the code that you're using, you know, they're just constantly updating it, you know, throughout the day. It used to be in the old days, an update once a day was a lot. But now it oftentimes these things are being updated multiple times throughout the day.
Alex, what does this say, for someone, you know, that may not know much about any of this, like myself? When I read stuff like this, where I go to immediately is the fragility of the system. How fragile is it?
So I'm right with you, and that was really my first thought, right? I think the story here is just how dependent, you know, the world is on a few companies, how wide the impact can be, you know, as we've consolidated things. It's really interesting just in our daily lives, too. I mean, if somebody had told you 10 or 15 years ago that if the internet were down, you could not get into your hotel room, or you couldn't turn on the lights in your house or adjust your thermostat, we would have laughed at them, right? And so it really is just everything is so interconnected and dependent. And, you know, I think people would be surprised at just how, you know, much work goes into kind of maintaining our infrastructure and our daily life. You know, there's just tons of women and men out there working every day to keep the lights on and everything else. So certainly, you know, there's kind of the risk of, you know, having a lot of things in just a handful of companies, but also just how connected and dependent everything is these days.
And then you always have to wonder about internal security of the companies that actually have the employees that are actually touching these systems every day, right?
Well, certainly that's something that, you know, you always want to be concerned with, right? You want to have, you know, processes and procedures in place and security controls and so on and so forth. The thing is, you know, anything is going to still require people. And so no matter how secure your systems are and kind of what you're doing, there still generally are going to be people that have access to your data and your systems and so forth. And obviously we need to be able to trust them and make sure they're doing the right thing and keep an eye on what they're doing. And certainly ensure that, you know, we're setting things up so they're checks and balances, and that no one person kind of has the ability to cause significant issues.
Alex, I was just watching the Secret Service director testifying before Congress, and she on many cases talked about, you know, assets and resources, human capital necessary. Everyone is kind of down and out trying to hire people. As an industry, are we graduating enough folks here in this country to support what we need?
I think that every industry could use more people. I think that the issue, too, is I don't know that it's necessarily the number of bodies. It's also the experience, right? So even if we were to kind of graduate, you know, a million people.
But everybody's got to start somewhere, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm right with you for that. But I think that's one of the challenges, too, right, is it takes a while to learn some of this stuff.
But again, do you think that we have what we have in place today? Are we graduating enough folks to backfill, to to move through the process, to pay their dues, move up the corporate ladder, gain the experience?
So I think we could absolutely use more people. But the thing is, with information security and technology, a lot of those jobs don't necessarily require degrees, right? So I would reframe it kind of, are we training enough people, right? Are we bringing enough people into the industry who are going to be able to do jobs? And I think one of the challenges, too, is, oftentimes a lot of organizations want to bring people in with lots of experience and ability but don't want to pay large salaries. And so there's oftentimes a disconnect there, too, right? So there are a lot of people looking for jobs and a lot of job openings, but those don't always align very well.
So how does the industry correct itself? I mean, when you think about this, right, and the economic impact of this, is huge. And I don't know that we'll ever be able to quantify it, right?
So it is tough to quantify. You can certainly look at kind of person hours for bringing things back online or lost commerce or, just the airlines. Wow, right? The cost there. But it's tough. And I think that it's really tough to get people to do things based on things that haven't happened yet, right? Like insurance, right? No one likes paying their insurance bill. I mean, you pay it, and I've never had an accident in all my years of driving, but I've always paid insurance. And so the key is how do you get people to focus on the possible, right? You know, when there is an event, you oftentimes will see a flurry of activity and budgets and everything else to kind of react to that. But it's really tough to get people to make decisions and put in effort and spend money, for things that have not come to fruition yet, right? So the things that are risks, but we have not seen materialized. It's extremely difficult to get budget and person hours and everything else for that. So that's a huge challenge, too, is how do we even, get people to commit to improving things?
When you have one company that has this much market share, right, there are those out there arguing the point that this industry is too centralized. And when I start hearing these conversations, that means it's ripe for government intervention and government regulation. Do you fear that?
So it's tough, right? Because, when a product works really well, people are going to want to use it. And, people choose certain products for different reasons, whether it's pricing or how effective it is and so on and so forth. And so the thing is, it's tougher than, in the old days when everybody, like Rockefeller, and they broke those things up. That's much different, I think, than software oftentimes, right? Because people are kind of using this product for a reason. It's not like someone just has a monopoly, right? It's people are going to a certain product for a reason. So it's tougher there. I do think that, at some point we're likely to get more legislation, more requirements around how organizations are functioning and securing things and some of those processes. But it's really tough to kind of, because we certainly do have a huge risk, where certain companies, look how much of the world runs on Microsoft or certain other things, right? And so it's just a really tough thing to go in and change.
Yeah, obviously there are going to be those that say that we need to be more decentralized and that we can't have so many industry silos of critical services being provided reliant on the same vendor, right? And because if something happens, if they get hacked or whatever it may be, you're knocking out a whole sector of an economy, of an international economy, not just a national economy. And there's a lot of risk associated with same.
And that's absolutely a concern, right? But you even look at, some of the cloud providers are so big, and people don't realize just how many of their daily services and, would be unavailable if one of those cloud providers were unavailable. And there's not always a lot of redundancy. Redundancy and resiliency are extremely expensive, right? In many cases can obviously double the cost or even more. And so, it's just really tough to get people to spend money on prevention, whether it's, people's personal health or whether it's kind of business expenses or whatever you have. People tend to be very reactive, not proactive. And so until you have a major incident, you know, we as kind of a society and humans and everything else don't generally want to go back and or don't want to change things, right, until you have that event. It's just really tough to get people to do things preventatively.
The old conflict of being proactive versus reactive, right?
Absolutely.
And proactive costs money, and reactive typically ends up costing more. But
it's tough, and again, it's if you spend a bunch of money and prevent something, I mean, there's no way to show that you truly prevented it, right? It didn't happen. And so, again, it's just really easy to start cutting back on investments that are preventing things that are unseen. And so, again, I think it's just human nature that until we have a big event, you know, nobody really necessarily wants to react in a proactive way.
It's hard to wrap your head around spending money on things that you hope you never have to use, right?
Right, absolutely.
See, it's like building a wall. We're used to that down here with we're used to that down here with hurricane preparedness, spending money in a lot of different areas that you hope you'd never have to use.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking of, is a seawall or a levee. And, you know, you build it, and it's super expensive, and it kind of sits there. And if you never restore them, it's like, well, we could have used that money for something else, right? But you have to have it.
Yeah, it's a mind game that no one really wants to play, for sure. Alex Hammerstone, as always, you provide a lot of great information. Thank you so much for joining us today. Advisory Solutions Director at Trusted Sec. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks so much.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us. WWL and Dudley DeBosier Injury Lawyers want you to throw your fours up with the black and gold every time they're home in the dome. You could win the Saints season four-pack. That's four tickets to every regular season home game. Listen for the keyword each weekday at 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. Then once you have all four keywords, enter that day's four-word phrase online at WWL.com/contest. And you're in to win. In fact, today's word is the, T-H-E. Throw your fours up with the Saints season four-pack from Dudley DeBosier Injury Lawyers at 444-4444 and WWL. The testimony continues before Congress. I'm checking in periodically with a complete and total frustration exhibited by the members of Congress. In fact, Representative Goldman, Democrat, is questioning the director, Kimberly Cheadle, at the present time. And he's just completely frustrated, saying, I don't understand. You granted an interview to ABC News. You revealed more information to that individual than you have to this committee on Congress, of Congress. And this is very concerning. A number of committee members have asked for her resignation in this regard. You will recall, and I will admit, that I said that we need to exhibit patience. I still believe that. But my patience are wearing thin. I think a lot of others' patience are wearing thin. We are now, 9 days post-incident, and some of the most basic, elementary information about this she's not willing to reveal. And that's problematic. And in fact, in many cases, she won't even acknowledge whether or not she has or knows the answer to the question, which is problematic as well. And so here we are. We continue to play this cat and mouse game. And I don't know at what point in time they're going to feel comfortable revealing some of this information. You've interviewed witnesses. Others are going to interview witnesses. Obviously, I would suspect that that you know your interviewing skills and the questions are going to be relatively the same. I mean, this is not rocket science. Where was that building as it related to the plan that day that was going to be executed, plain and simple, pretty straightforward, right? You look at the security plan for the protectee, meaning Donald Trump, the security plan relative to the attendees, the general public, Where is the inner perimeter? Where's the outer perimeter? Who is involved? Who has what responsibility? What, when, and how? They wouldn't even reveal the security plan. And every security plan, so it's not like you're giving up methods and protocols and this and that, because every security plan is unique unto itself, because it is determined by the physical layout, right? There could be environmental factors. There could be the topography of the land. There could be buildings. It could be a thousand different things that are going to influence the plan. So it's not like you're giving up some trade secret detail by looking at the security plan. Now, numbers and this and that, and in a general sense, not so much either, right? I mean, everybody pretty much knows what's happening and what's going on. Yet you have enough retired Secret Service agents and number of retired state agents, local law enforcement, myself included, that have talked about this ad nauseum as to our experiences at any of these events. I mean, it's not like it's a top secret 007 information that you're not getting. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous to think that, because every plan, it should be unique unto itself, depending on the characteristics of where the event's being held, the time, this, that. What's the climate in society at that point in time? How many identified threats do we have? Those are all things that you don't even have to talk about. You just talk about things in its general sense and leave it at that. But we're not even willing to do that. So it's going to be interesting. I don't understand, and I said this last week, why would you grant an interview with ABC before you addressed Congress about this issue? I think that was a strategic error. I don't know why they did it, but I think it's going to come back to haunt this director. And it may very well be the deciding factor as to whether or not she's going to be willing to hold on to her job. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. WWL and Dudley DeBosier Injury Lawyers want you to throw your fours up with the black and gold every time they're home in the dome. You could win the Saints season four-pack. That's four tickets to every regular season home game. Listen for the keyword each weekday at 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. Then once you have all four keywords, enter that day's four-word phrase online at WWL.com/contest. And you're in to win. In fact, today's word is the, T-H-E. Throw your fours up with the Saints season four-pack from Dudley DeBosier Injury Lawyers at 444-4444 and WWL. The testimony continues before Congress. I'm checking in periodically with a complete and total frustration exhibited by the members of Congress. In fact, Representative Goldman, Democrat, is questioning the director, Kimberly Cheadle, at the present time. And he's just completely frustrated, saying, I don't understand. You granted an interview to ABC News. You revealed more information to that individual than you have to this committee on Congress, of Congress. And this is very concerning. A number of committee members have asked for her resignation in this regard. You will recall, and I will admit, that I said that we need to exhibit patience. I still believe that. But my patience are wearing thin. I think a lot of others' patience are wearing thin. We are now, 9 days post-incident, and some of the most basic, elementary information about this she's not willing to reveal. And that's problematic. And in fact, in many cases, she won't even acknowledge whether or not she has or knows the answer to the question, which is problematic as well. And so here we are. We continue to play this cat and mouse game. And I don't know at what point in time they're going to feel comfortable revealing some of this information. You've interviewed witnesses. Others are going to interview witnesses. Obviously, I would suspect that your interviewing skills and the questions are going to be relatively the same. I mean, this is not rocket science. Where was that building as it related to the plan that day that was going to be executed, plain and simple, pretty straightforward, right? You look at the security plan for the protectee, meaning Donald Trump, the security plan relative to the attendees, the general public. Where is the inner perimeter? Where's the outer perimeter? Who is involved? Who has what responsibility? What, when, and how? They wouldn't even reveal the security plan. And every security plan, so it's not like you're giving up methods and protocols and this and that, because every security plan is unique unto itself, because it is determined by the physical layout, right? There could be environmental factors. There could be the topography of the land. There could be buildings. It could be a thousand different things that are going to influence the plan. So it's not like you're giving up some trade secret detail by looking at the security plan. Now, numbers and this and that, and in a general sense, not so much either, right? I mean, everybody pretty much knows what's happening and what's going on. You have enough retired Secret Service agents and number of retired state agents, local law enforcement, myself included, that have talked about this ad nauseum as to our experiences at any of these events. I mean, it's not like it's a top secret 007 information that you're not getting. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous to think that, because every plan, it should be unique unto itself, depending on the characteristics of where the event's being held, the time, this, that, what's the climate in society at that point in time, how many identified threats do we have. Those are all things that you don't even have to talk about. You just talk about things in its general sense and leave it at that. But we're not even willing to do that. So it's going to be interesting. I don't understand, and I said this last week, why would you grant an interview with ABC before you addressed Congress about this issue? I think that was a strategic error. I don't know why they did it, but I think it's going to come back to haunt this director, and it may very well be the deciding factor as to whether or not she's going to be willing to hold on to her job. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.